Hey everybody, welcome back to Gamer Heroes episode 24. I'm Derek, I got John here.
Yo!
What's up, man?
It's good, man, it's really good. We actually have stuff to talk about this week.
We usually have stuff to talk about.
with the exception of the scarce news, as everyone knows, it's a desert after E3.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. If things sound different this week, we tried a multi-mic experience last week, and if you heard the echoes and stuff like that, I'm very sorry. We did not discover the inconsistent echoing until it was a little too late. So
I like how you phrased that. It was the Dolby experience.
Not in a good way, man. But yes, yeah, so we're going to be talking about the game Vaccine. We're going to be talking about Zelda Breath of the Wild. We'll be talking Overwatch, a little bit of PS4, and then Castlevania.
Yeah, that's our main topic this week, by the way, if you didn't know.
Yeah,
so save the best for last.
That's what we're talking about. So I'll just jump in real quick with a little bit of Breath of the Wild stuff.
Sure.
We talked last week, I was kind of getting back into it, trying to finish it up. I knocked out the fourth Divine Beast.
So
I've got all of them now.
Explain. So I've been playing it too a little bit more. So the fourth Divine Beast, and we had a little discussion about this.
Oh, right, the map issue.
The map issue. So since it's an open world.
Yes.
You can technically choose a random point and go.
I guess.
Right?
Yeah.
So I guess I must have done that.
So okay, so let me ask you this. So you went to the village, right? And
to talk to Impa or
yeah,
whatever her name
spoke,
is. Yeah.
You spoke to Impa.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, did you not go north and back towards the castle in that direction?
Or I have a better feeling because I'm right at the Divine Beast. I went to this water type kingdom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, the elephant.
So, yes.
The elephant beast.
Yes.
Okay. That is the first one you're
supposed
to go to.
So yes. I did go to the right one. Okay. I started going north, and then you just kind of start going east.
Yeah, so you basically, like, that's kind of the flow. So you go to that one. The next one is on the volcano.
Gotcha.
And then after that, you kind of have a choice at that point. My missions kind of took me south through into the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the desert one, which is actually what I'm dubbing the cross-dressing episode of Breath of the Wild, where you actually do have to cross-dress to enter the village.
I now know what to do.
Well,
who to talk to.
You don't, though, because it's a little weird, because there's a character you have to talk to who's in a very strange spot and only available certain times of the day. So, and then the last one is in the far, I guess, west. And that is with that's a bird. It's in the air, so
gotcha.
There's a lot of the Rito.
So it's like a mountainous terrain, or
a little bit. It's more of it's up high. It's cold. There's some snow and things like that. And the Rito are all birds, so they can all fly and things like that.
Cool.
Which is pretty cool. I will say that was, for me at least, definitely the easiest Divine Beast by a long shot.
So let me ask you this. Since I'm tackling on my first beast, is there always little random crap that you have to collect before you can fight the beast? Like the one that I'm about to fight in the Water Kingdom,
uh-huh.
Like, you need to get 20 shock arrows. 20.
So,
it's a very specific number of shock arrows.
It's funny that they did. I think that was to kind of help, because it's the first one you go to, is kind of help teach you inventory and things like that, because later they just give you the items that you need.
See, and that's what I thought. And I imagine, like, that's how it would be, because I'm like, well, I've got this lightning rod thing. Is that not going
to
work?
No, you have to have the arrows.
Apparently it's 20 exact arrows that takes them down.
Yeah, later they just kind of give you what you need. for the last two Divine Beasts, they really just give them to you, which is fine. But yeah, so you have to always do, like, a thing to stop the beast,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to go in the beast, and then you have to spin the beast or make the beast move in certain ways to get to these terminals that you have to turn on, that so you can activate the beast and regain control. And of course, then that's when the bad guy shows up that you have to fight. And I'm not going to go too spoilery after that. But the final one, the Rito beast, the bird beast, was the only one that I was able to do in one clean shot.
No way.
Without having to leave and come back, or without dying, or without having to look up a walkthrough to figure out, like, a certain part of it. Because normally there'd be one terminal that I wasn't sure how to get to. I couldn't quite figure out how to maneuver the beast to get to it. Or, as was the case in the desert with the camel beast, that was just a very difficult Ganon to fight. And so I died a few times, right? But this one, it was just really straightforward and to the point and very easy for me. And that was a little bit anticlimactic. But yeah, so now I'm ready to fight Ganon. So I'm gonna finish unlocking the last two towers so I can finish the map. Get a few more shrines, get another heart or two maybe, or some more stamina, and then I'm going after them. So
that's I'm excited for you.
I'm at the 45 hour mark for the game, which is pretty cool. I feel good about that. It certainly doesn't feel like 45 hours. It feels so much shorter than that because I've just been enjoying it so much. But yeah, that's been my main focus right now.
That's good. Like, I've been trying to get back into it, obviously.
But you played a new game. You played Vaccine.
So,
what is Vaccine, for those who may not know?
So, this is kind of a new game that just popped up. It's it's definitely an indie title. Just popped up here on the store about, what was it, last week?
Give or take. Yeah, forget the date, but it's new.
So, Vaccine, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a post-apocalyptic type setting where... It's kind of interesting. So I'll lay out the picture for you.
Okay.
So
paint us a picture.
The game starts in a room, literally a bedroom, with a person on the bed who's infected.
Okay.
And the goal of the game is you have 24 hours to locate the vaccine and cure your friend.
Okay.
So the game is very it's very different, and I'll tell you why. So every time you die, it resets the map. You come up in a new room.
Okay.
And the controls and the whole play style controls, the little puzzles, the zombies in the game are very, very reminiscent of Resident Evil, the original Resident Evil game for PlayStation.
Okay. And you're playing this on Switch?
Playing this on Switch.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're talking the dumb camera angles, one for really low or one for really high, and the weird directional pad where, you know, because of the camera angle, when you're pressing forward, it makes you go back, stuff like that. All of the annoyances from the first Resident Evil game. But if you enjoyed that game and you were used to it, then you're used to these type of controls and these type of dumb camera angles. So for me, it's pretty much enjoyable. I like the game a lot.
Okay.
I will say, though, if you are a person who is impatient and camera angles really bug you and you don't have the best weapons or the best, you feel like you don't like getting close to your enemies, it's probably not a game for you.
Okay. I do like the idea that the maps are procedurally generated, so it's different every single time. Because, you know, one of the things about The Last of Us, as amazing as that game is, the clickers were always in the same spot doing the same thing. So, like, there's a part fairly early on in The Last of Us where you have to get through this particular area, and I was having a very difficult time, and I basically just memorized where they were and ran through that part of the game because I couldn't defeat him. I wasn't getting it.
Yeah,
you know, but
so like I said, that must have been really early on in the game because later on is when you are able to shiv clickers and push them off of you.
I mean, you had that ability this early on in the game. It's a skill I was never good at the entire time that I played.
So that you would
do you mind just taking it away from her? I'm not sure what else to do. Thank you.
Okay. I'm gonna go wait. Okay. She moved around over here. Let's try it. So yeah, it must have been really early on in the game when you were not able to shiv and push off clickers.
It wasn't that early. Like, you could do it. I was never good at that ability, so I was just constantly either taking too long or making too much noise, kind of thing.
So this vaccine, they're always in your face because the movement is so difficult that you can't go, you can't really get away. Like, there's no running around them.
Is it always indoors, or do you go outside at any point?
You go outside, but it's like a hall. It's like basically an alleyway or something really small. It's so always like, close quarters.
It's like on rails.
Always close quarters.
But yeah. You never know what the next turn's going to be.
Exactly, because of the camera angles. That's so there'll be a point where you turn a corner, and then the camera will shift to the opposite end where it's looking at you.
Okay, so it's very fixed camera.
Yes, that's okay. Exactly what it is.
Because I remember, so Resident Evil 7, which is the newer game, I know some people complained about that at times, but I know that's an older mechanic, that the Resident Evil games have done that before. So I was surprised that people were complaining about it because it's just kind of part of the franchise. So do you think that the procedurally generated maps made it difficult, or do you think it was the camera angles?
It's 100% the camera angles.
Yeah.
And the movement.
Okay.
Because when the camera angle changes, the movement changes.
Sure, right. So the camera's on a different side of you.
Exactly.
Left is different.
So that's what makes it hard. Okay. Is when you're trying to navigate, and let's say like the game has like, this is strategically placed. The game has like a zombie in one corner and then a zombie closer to you. Mm-hmm. So let's say you try to go around the first zombie. You have to hit the second one. There's no way you can get around it.
Okay. So is what kind of weapons do you get?
So you can get this is the interesting part. I've collected a few random weapons that I thought were not suitable for the game, like a landmine, and I picked up a shotgun, a pistol, which those are normal knives.
Sure. Yeah.
And there was like some other random grenade, and I was just like, oh, those are just laying around. I gotcha. those are in all alleyways.
That's a little bit of Dead Rising.
Yeah, it's just a little weird. But I have yet to run into any creatures or anything like that. So far it's just been zombies. And I'll tell you that 24 hours, it feels pretty long. It doesn't feel like you're running out of time. I've never lasted long enough to be like, oh, I'm running out of time.
Okay. So that's a good point though, because like, so for those, who haven't necessarily played, there's a game called Pandemic. It's originally a tabletop game.
Yeah, I actually own the tabletop.
There's a great app for it, actually.
I've never played it.
It's really, really good.
That's cool.
I love the tabletop game, so I'm already a fan of that. But the app version lets you you can play with CPUs on your team. So that's a
nice
cooperative game, so you don't have to play with other people if you're just like, you know, sitting on a bus or something. And I've gotten to the point now where I lose every time, but I just run out of time.
Right, right.
And that's really frustrating because I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm almost there. I've got like one thing left to do, and I run out of time. So you've never got like, does it have like a running clock?
It does. There is a clock at the top of the screen at all times.
What's the closest you got to running out of time? Do you know?
So far, it's a 24-hour clock. I've probably ran it down to 19.
Oh, wow.
Before.
Okay.
But again, that was just me running around in the rooms, and they're in random spots. So it's not like you're in, like in Resident Evil 2, you're like in the giant police station. Mm-hmm. I mean, this thing is like a maze. This is in random spots.
And you know,
it's completely different.
Yeah. It's random. So you never know where the vaccine is.
You don't.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
So, okay. So when you do a normal playthrough and you've spent 5 hours of quote game time in game time.
Right.
How long has that taken you in the real world?
I didn't time it.
Yeah, okay,
honestly, I have no idea. I want to say it's probably close to an hour, like a real hour.
Yeah.
I spent it was about 19 at the hour mark for me when I was playing it.
So maybe like an hour every 20 minutes or so.
I would say so.
Game. Okay.
It's an interesting game, guys. It's only $10 with taxes on the Nintendo Store. It's $10.95. So
that's not too bad. For those who don't have a Switch, it is available on other platforms.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
So it's out on PS4, Xbox One, and Steam. Hmm. It was also out on Wii U. So I'm assuming that this is just like a straight port of the Wii U version to the Switch.
Interesting.
I don't actually know that, but yeah, it was a Wii U title.
But this is not a game, by the way, this is not a game where you expect the graphics to be top notch.
No,
it's very 8-bit, and
it reminded me like I was looking at some screenshots.
16-bit, sorry.
It looks like the old Resident Evil.
Yeah, it does.
Just visually,
it does.
The
camera and the characters, like you get to choice between a male and a female, and they're both wearing like SWAT team outfits, which is exactly like Resident Evil.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
So it's very reminiscent. You can tell that was the inspiration for the game.
That's cool. Well, you know, I'll probably check it out because I'm always looking for something new to play on Switch, especially something that's a departure from Nintendo's normal first-party stuff. So that'll be cool. For those wondering, it's made by Rainy Night Creations. That's the game company. They've got one other title out there that's called Freeze Me, and that's their other game, same platforms, though I don't think it's hit Switch yet, but it was on Wii U. So, you know, that's something to check out. Let's see what else we got going on here. So in the news, a couple of small things. First off, for you people out there who either want a PS4
you
PS4ers out there. I mean, I have a PS4. I'm just joking around. But they've announced and shown the pictures of a white PS4 Pro. Now, if people who remember back, of course, you know, there was a white, you know, PS2 and so forth, and a Vita and all that kind of stuff. Well, now we've got a white PS4 Pro. However, if you want this thing, you're going to have to get it in the Destiny 2 bundle. It's the only way to get it. It's a limited edition thing. What's interesting is it comes with a physical copy of the game, not digital, which I thought was a weird choice. I like that because I like collecting the physical game still. That's me. But considering the direction the market is going,
yeah,
I was surprised to see that. It looks like that it's going to come in at $449.99 USD for the PS4 Pro, 1 terabyte hard drive, matching white controller.
So basically it's the white version of the gold one. Except with a game.
I mean, well, the gold one was just a regular.
No, it came with 1 terabyte.
But it was a PS4 that wasn't a Pro.
Oh, you're right.
It was the Slim.
Wow, that's actually.
So that was cheaper.
That's actually
too.
A pretty good deal.
Well, so this one you've got. So the Pro is normally $399.
Right.
So basically, what this does is you're saving money on the game.
Like $20.
Because, you know, the game. Well, it's a little confusing. Because, so, you know, in today's world, if it's a AAA title, there's more than one version of the game out there.
Yeah. Right. And there's expansion.
So this comes with the physical copy of Destiny 2, as well as codes that get you the expansion packs.
There you go.
Which I think there's two of at this point. So basically, it's kind of like getting the digital deluxe edition, which is $100. So you're getting half off. You're saving $50.
Right.
So if you don't have a Pro and you want a Pro and you're going to get Destiny 2, then this is a good deal because you're going to save $50.
Absolutely.
And then on top of that, yeah, it's white, which is cool. Not to slam the gold one or anything like that, but I think the white looks better than the gold did.
Definitely.
I've got the Arkham Knight Silver Edition of the PS4.
Which is awesome.
Which is cool too. So yeah. I like these alternate colors that they do. And, you know, for me, I've got the Arkham Knight PS4, but I do have the white Xbox One S. Might be kind of nice to have two white ones sitting on the TV stand next to.
Well, you've been wanting to get a Pro for some time now.
I mean, yes and no. The extra hard drive space would be nice. But on the flip side, I don't have a 4K setup yet. You know, so I don't really get any advantages of that. I don't have PSVR. So there's really not a whole lot I would gain. So I'll probably wait. The only reason I upgraded my original Xbox One to the S was due to the doubled hard drive. And it didn't really cost me anything. It cost me about $50 to upgrade because of my trade-in.
So that's worth it.
So that was worth it. Yeah, $50 to double my hard drive space.
Now, if they did that kind of deal, this was GameStop, correct?
They had a pretty good deal going. I sold it to a friend.
Gotcha. So, okay. I was going to say, if I could spend an extra $50 and get a Pro PS4 Pro, I would totally do it right now.
Right. I get that. But that's a thing. It looks like that bundle comes out on September 6th, which is, you know, when the game comes out, of course. So, you know, it's an option out there.
Yeah.
If that's something that you want.
I imagine since – what is that? When is the release date on Destiny?
It's September 6th.
So I imagine if you are going to purchase a PS4 Pro, you might even just wait till the holiday season because – I can already tell you there's going to be at least three other bundles.
Well, but if you want this unique color, and some people like that stuff, like I understand that.
Yeah.
You're only going to get – it's a limited run. And so far the Pro, it came out in jet black for a little while. That was another exclusive bundle. And then it's just the regular PS4 Pro. So they're not doing a lot of different colored options for that console like they have, you know, in the past for different models. So if you want the white one –
mm-hmm.
You're probably going to want to go out and pre-order that and get it when it first comes out. If you want to wait and get a deal on a PS4 Pro, yeah, by all means, wait until November, December, but you're probably not going to get a white one.
Well, I'm expecting at least one more alternate color. They've already broken number one. They've already went further on than last year. Last year when they released PS4s, there were two different or three alternate type colors or special editions.
But not the Pro. The Pro they've kept really main. This is only the third different kind of Pro.
Right, right.
So I would not expect another one this year. Maybe next year. But
Last of Us 2. So
there you go. That
would actually be a good one.
I would absolutely expect that.
That would be a good one to do it on. So.
And then the only other piece of news that we're really going to talk about today has to do with Overwatch. So Overwatch has announced its first six Overwatch League teams from Blizzard. What's interesting is that several of these owners actually own physical sports teams.
Like the Patriots. What the hell?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Robert Kraft, who owns the New England Patriots.
Which we all fucking hate. Let's just be honest. Sorry.
Yeah, you Patriots fans out there. I'm sorry. I hate that man a lot. Not as much as I hate Belichick, but I don't like him. I don't like Kraft at all. He uses his influence, his money, and his power to bully around the rest of the league, and I don't appreciate that. But he's not the only one. We've got a few other people here. One of the higher up executives of the New York Mets owns a team as well. So basically, there's going to be a team in New York, New England, Los Angeles, Miami, San Francisco. There's one in China and one in Seoul in South Korea. So, and Shanghai. There's one in Shanghai too. So it's really an interesting mix. I like that it's not just American
teams.
It's
global, yeah.
Which is cool. I wish the mix was a little bit better because it's still very heavy on the American side. Whereas, there's no European team at all. Which is a little disappointing.
See, I wonder what that reasoning for that is.
It's probably the entry point. It's $20 million for entry.
Yeah.
And so, to not see any European or Central or South American teams was a little disappointing. No Canadian teams, no Mexico teams. Obviously seeing, South Korea is not shocking because StarCraft has been a professional sport in South Korea for a very long time. But I would have liked to have seen more of the world represented and not we don't need, four teams here in the States between. Yeah, we have four teams in the States.
As a country, we have more money.
So
we
have the big sports, right? These guys, if you own the New England Patriots, it's a $1 billion organization. $20 million is, a drop in the bucket for you.
Which is what I felt like why he did that to begin with. But just saying.
But there's some interesting stuff in here. They'll be doing some of this at BlizzCon, so we'll get to kind of see what that looks like. So
what are your thoughts on making gaming? Because I think this is kind of although you said StarCraft has been doing this for a while, this is kind of a first step for, Call of Duty's kind of had something like this, where they meet in Vegas and they do this giant tournament that's televised, etc. But it's never been on a global scale, number one. And number two, it's never been quite this mainstream. So what is your opinion on this start of the gaming ESPN, yeah. I should say?
It's a shift. So historically, there's been international gaming competitions. StarCraft, WoW, Hearthstone, especially Heroes of the Storm. Blizzard's had these for a long time. Of course, Heroes of the Storm and Hearthstone are not old games, so those not for forever. But they've been doing this. This is not new for them. What they haven't had in the video game world are officially sponsored teams that have an identity, the Kansas City Chiefs and the New England Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles or the New York Mets and the Dodgers and the Lakers and things like that. That's not been a thing. It's just been a group of people who play, and they're sponsored by some companies, of course, but this is different. This is more organized like a professional sports team.
Right, which is the part that scares me. So what, are we going to start drafting players from the US?
Might. I mean, you actually might, though. And I think I don't see anything from a practical standpoint, from a philosophical standpoint, I don't see anything wrong with esports being just as legitimate as sports, for lack of a better term, whatever you want to call those, physical sports. I think that how it's handled, of course, will be the really deciding factor. Because we've the truth is we've had some pretty crooked physical sports. You know, boxing has had many issues over the years. Even the NFL has had some issues. Major League Baseball has had issues. Hell, I mean, you look at soccer throughout the world, and there's some sketchy shit that happens in you know, what the world calls football. Not NFL stuff, but like real football. Even, you know, refs.
We have basically a team that represents every country, and we're talking communist or not.
So like, what's interesting is that esports almost has the opportunity to be more legitimate because less cheating can go on in esports if it's managed well than in a physical sport. Because in a physical sport, refs can look the other way. But in an esport, if you're using the tournament's or the league's equipment, you know, that's not hacked,
evens
the playing field more. Now, of course, it's possible. There's still computers, right? Things get hacked. People will cheat. But it will be harder for people to be bought in an esport league from that perspective because there's not as much of that human oversight. It's more of being confined by the game because right. The game won't let you do things that in the real world you can do, right? Now, of course, you can still have teams, you know, throw games and stuff like that, which happens in physical sports too.
Yeah, has been a very...
like I said, in boxing, that happens a lot to get rematches and things like that. We were just kind of talking about that earlier today.
Yeah, because the Mayweather fight's coming up with McGregor.
Let's
just talk about that.
I was talking about this with some people earlier today that, you know, it might be a good financial move for Mayweather to throw the fight, have McGregor win the fight, and then want a rematch.
Rematch it, yeah.
And then these guys get paid twice, maybe three times, if Mayweather wins
the rematch, they'll just pull away like they did with the Pacquiao fight, where they just hype it up so high.
That was so boring.
And make it the most boring fight you could possibly make.
But that stuff happens in physical sports, so of course it'll happen in esports, or has the potential to. What I like here is the opportunity for people who love video games and understand the skill, the talent, the excitement behind it is just as legitimate as a physical sport is. It's a different kind of talent. It's a different type of ability. But look, some people are born naturals at these games.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people who are just going to be born better first-person shooter players or RTS players or what have you. Just like there are some people that are faster runners or stronger people. You know, you have genetic, you're genetically predisposed for things. Esports is no different from that.
So, like, in your opinion, you think this is a good thing?
I do.
You're excited for this and you want to see this?
Absolutely. I'm not sure that $20 million is a good way to start it. I think that might be a little high, but I'm gonna wait and see how that goes. I mean, they got 7 teams to sign up, which, I mean, you know, is better than a lot of leagues. So
I mean, that's a lot of money just in that pool alone.
It is, and you know, you keep in mind that you're not hosting a team of 53 people like you are in the NFL, you know, or anything like that. You're only gonna have maybe half a dozen on a team. Of course, that'll vary by game. With Overwatch, you'll probably, you know, you'll have some alternates, so maybe it's 8 or 10 people.
So how do they handle it? Are they gonna do a new server where?
Yeah, they'll be dedicated tournament servers.
Which makes sense because number one, I don't want to play with those people.
Well, I mean, you probably have.
You can.
Yeah. I remember at BlizzCon a couple years ago, I was playing the new StarCraft expansion, Legacy of the Void, when it first was debuted at BlizzCon, with a couple of friends, and there was this one guy who was there who just wiped the floor with us. And I don't know, he might have been one of the guys competing that weekend. He was pretty amazing. But they're going to have special servers because the games get tweaked so often.
Right.
That they're going to have, like, this is the 2017 game server, and it doesn't change in 2017. Right? Just like in real sports, the rules don't change during the season. They change in the off season.
Right.
Right? So that what you did in 2016 might not work in 2017, but you had the off season to adjust. This will have to be the same way. You're not going to have characters nerfed or buffed or characters added or maps added in normal league play during a season. You'll have to have an off season or expedition. Yeah.
I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah. So, you know, that's just kind of how the league's going to have to work in order for people to be able to take it seriously and in order for it to be consistent and fair. Because the last thing you need is for a league game to be going on and 10 minutes before the game starts, you know,
Everyone's doing Roadhog's
hook. Roadhog's hook gets nerfed, and everybody freaks right. out.
Everyone's downloading prior to the game.
Yeah, that can't
the newest update.
It's gotta be. You know, I'm making up these dates, but let's pretend the season is March 1st through November. You know, through November 1st, right? Let's just pretend that's the season. Then you're gonna have to have the exact same player statistics or character statistics through that entire time. And if you're going to make a change to a character in league play, that's going to happen on November 2nd for the next year.
Right.
So this it'll be interesting to see. There'll be growing pains just like there always is. For example, you look at the Arena Football League. The AFL has been around for a little over 20 years. We're from Kansas City.
It goes
for those
up and
know,
down.
Our team folded twice. We no longer have it.
Right.
It's not always successful, and it's not going to be successful in every market. What's going to be interesting here is how will you know what a good market is? Are you going to host physical locations for these tournaments like you do for a football game?
See,
or
that
a
was the part
game?
That was the part that I was concerned about. So, are we now going to start building arenas for this for people to come and watch?
I think you'll have to.
Or are we going to do these at conventions?
Well,
I
think it's a little bit of overlap. I think you're still going to have championships are still going to happen at BlizzCon. Because it's their game and it's their convention.
Oh, yeah. And what's the best way to bring everyone
but
to
the arenas game? That they build, I mean, the StarCraft arena is pretty cool that they put together every year for the championship at BlizzCon. I would imagine that these cities, like Robert Kraft, is going to have to build something or rent out a space somewhere in New England to host it. Just like, you know, in Florida or in, wherever these teams are, they're going to have some space where these players can go and people can come and watch because you're going to want to sell tickets. You're going to want to sell jerseys and hats.
That's
and,
the problem I have
you know,
with it.
Hot dogs, the whole nine.
That's the problem I have with it.
But I think that's great because think about it like this. Not everybody wants to go to an NFL game. No, not everybody wants to go to Arrowhead. As much as I love going to Arrowhead, not everybody wants to go. But some people want to go watch their thing. And if you had the Sprint Center, which is here in Kansas City, which is a wonderful arena where we spend our time doing mostly concerts because we don't have a team there. Imagine, though, if you set up giant screens. And I'm talking, you know, hundreds and hundreds of inches. Giant projectors. And you had four of them up high. And you could sit anywhere in there and watch this. And there was... You know, there was music and there was, you know, pyrotechnics and there were commentators talking about stuff because maybe not – it wouldn't – you know, they already do this in Heroes of the Storm where they have commentators on these championships and these competitions where they talk about who's doing what and you can watch the different lanes and they switch between them and they talk strategy. There are strategies. When you play Hearthstone, there are certain types of deck builds, you know, that people do that are named appropriately for that style and – You can comment on those things the same way you can about the West Coast offense and the Wildcat offense and the you know the Jim Johnson bend don't break defense kind of stuff. I mean, you can do that same type of terminology with esports. There's really no difference.
I guess it's just I'm a personal my personal opinion. I just don't want to see this become commercialized. And next thing you know, I mean, we're already already evolving in a sense where. People aren't playing games anymore. They're just watching other people play the games on Twitch and stuff like that. This brings my next question, but I'm going to actually have another question about Twitch. But so it's like – so now we're getting away from – I know it's the intention is that people are going to want to play it more. They're going to want to – you know.
I don't know that that's the intention of the
esports. Yeah, it's obviously to make money. But what I'm saying though is like does this draw away – Well, I don't think I need to play. I can just watch professionals play.
I don't think so, though, because think about this. Think about it like this. You and I are not in the NFL, right? But we're both going to – or we'll pick a better thing for you and me. You and I do not play professional soccer in MLS.
Right.
But we're probably both going to pick up FIFA 18 for Switch.
That's different.
It's not different.
Yes, it is.
Because here's – well, it's different
because
in the sense
because one's physical
that,
and one's not.
Well, so in this case, we can actually get even closer to the real thing.
We
because
can.
We already play Overwatch. So we can actually do literally the same thing, just not as well, right? So I think that what this does is it broadens the scope and it allows people who maybe can't afford to play video games or maybe just enjoy watching them. I mean, the truth is, if I can watch – I like watching Hearthstone matches. I think they're a lot of fun.
I don't think so.
Because what people come up with in their deck building has always fascinated me because I like deck building. And I want to see what the best of the best put in their decks and how they stage their cards because there's combos and things like that.
That makes sense.
You know, I love that. And I think it's no different than somebody who played ball in college and couldn't quite make it into professional league, but they still want to go to Buffalo Wild Wings and watch a game while hanging out with some buddies. I would love if they were going to nationally televise Overwatch League games for you and me and a couple of other friends. We get Ryan
to go watch
like that, and go like eat some junk food and watch these matches, man. I think it would be a lot of fun.
When you pitch it that way, it sounds awesome. But my other question was, so do you think that this would obviously not, like, would this go in and work in cohesive with Twitch, or are we trying to push Twitch out and go, well, you're going to watch our stuff because we want you to come and pay?
Well, it's going to depend on the league, right? Because Twitch is not league-based. Twitch is individual-based.
So who do you think they'll push out Twitch?
I think that they have the potential to, but you have to keep in mind that Twitch is for everything. I mean, we streamed Screen Heroes on Twitch, our other podcast, right?
I'm talking about primarily the professionals are obviously going to be picked up.
But the professionals, they're not streaming their professional matches on Twitch. The tournaments are. The tournaments are streaming on Twitch. That's the key. And the reality is that we want to talk about commercializing. Well, games have been commercialized for a very long time. I mean, you could go back to Mountain Dew as a drink is basically a video game drink, and the high voltage stuff, and
they pitch it with Halo.
Like, yeah, it's
Doritos and Mountain Dew. It just goes with Halo.
Exactly. Right. Even Taco Bell to an extent.
Yeah, that's true.
It's commercialized. If you go to a video game convention, it is commercialized. They're not necessarily selling the same stuff, but when you go to a video game convention, it's Intel and IBM and Razer and SteelSeries, and you know they're there, right? That's commercialized. It's just a different commercial.
I guess I was just trying to get to the point where the main question was: Are we going to push other people out so that they can make money, or are we going to work with them?
It's
going to
be different
and leagues. Make it available for everyone.
It's not going to be available for everyone because it's a professional league, but that's no different than any other sport. You and I can go out and find a flag football league that's a rec league to join, and we can play. And if we get good enough, there's a lot of different football leagues out there. There's the indoor football league. There's a couple other independent leagues, and I'm drawing blank on names on here. But you know, there's different levels that you can get to, just like there is for hockey, and baseball has farm teams and all that kind of stuff. This will be no different. There will be people on Twitch who are going to be those lower level players, or the people who want to be independent players who are going to still have that as a thing. I mean, it is backed by Amazon now, so it's not like it's a small player,
right?
Versus Blizzard, which has Activision, of course, but it's still not Amazon.
What if they start drafting from Twitch? How crazy would that be?
But that you could see that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point that I'm trying to make is competition is not always a bad thing. A lot of the times it's a good thing. And in this case, what you're doing is you're taking an industry that is very jumbled and inconsistent, and you're starting to clear the path. You're starting to come up with rules and policies and things to measure. Because right now it's hard to do that. You know, I mean, hell, we could start our own video game tournament here in Kansas City and, you know, crown a champion. But what does that mean?
Probably nothing.
Right.
But if you have just Kansas City.
If you're the champion of the Overwatch League that is owned by Blizzard and Activision.
That's global.
That's a global international thing, right, that has guys like Robert Kraft, like him or not, who own these teams. That legitimizes you.
That's true.
Right.
I mean, that's a really good point.
And that means that these players have an opportunity to unionize. These players have an opportunity to get benefits and not be worked. In some of these cases, and not all, I don't want to speak for everybody out there, but a lot of these tournament players are not treated well by their sponsors. They work incredible hours. They get paid very little. They have very little breaks.
But there are ones that, on the flip side,
there are some
that
do a good job, just like, you know, there are some companies that treat their employees well without laws and some that don't, even with them. But what this will do is it will create a situation like the NFL, like Major League Baseball, like the NBA and the NHL and so forth, where these players can unionize and work together as a stronger force for the betterment of the player. Because at the end of the day, the leagues don't exist without the players. We can talk about the NFL all day long, right? But if the players don't play, You have the strike seasons.
No, we have no nobody NFL.
Likes the strike seasons. Yeah. All right. I'm a Philly guy, and there was a season where you had the Pennsylvania Steagles. The Steelers and the Eagles combined to be a team for one season because of the player strike. Nobody wants to see that again. All right. And if we can legitimize esports like Blizzard's trying to do with the Overwatch League, the players can be better protected.
I think that's a fine point to end at.
All right. Well, then let's move on then to the big topic.
Hold on. Guys, we want to hear your opinion on this. Do you think this is a good thing? Do you think this is a bad thing? Give me some insight. Drop us a comment or leave us a review.
Yes. So you can find us at heroespodcast.com, at heroespodcast on Facebook and Twitter. So go talk to us. But we're not done yet.
We've got
Castlevania, the show. The series. The Netflix series.
So first questions first. Have you played the original on Super Nintendo?
Wow, you're just going right out there.
Yeah.
Huh?
So that's calling you out.
So you're calling me out immediately. So I have to say this. I have never played a Castlevania.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
It's been a blind spot for me. It was just one that I missed as a kid and never got back into later on. I have every intention.
I feel like you would
play them
it,
at some
though.
Point. They're on my list, but I'm aware of them. I've read up on them. I know about the platforms and some different things. So I was somewhat prepared to watch the show, but like most video game stuff that gets made into a movie or anything like that, I try not to compare too much because it's rare that they line up.
So a lot of people, that at least from the reviews that I've read, are like, it's not a direct translation. It's not exactly like the game. Folks, it's an old game that you got the story based on the progress you made through the game. Okay? And that's even inconsistent.
Well, yeah.
So
I mean, they've
add dialogue to make all those events happen is a lot harder, in my opinion.
It's a complicated timeline,
yeah.
And they've even removed some games from the official canon timeline.
They had to. In order to streamline and make consistency and create, it's kind of like, you know, the shows, like there's a show right now about John Adams. Okay, there are things that happen in John Adams' life we know, but there are conversations that we don't know about that happen in between those events. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the same thing with the show, is I feel like they have to add dialogue, they have to remove things, they have to make it so that it's somewhat consistent to those events in the story.
Well, I think they didn't want to copy a game, because then for the same reason that what was the more recent one that I'm thinking of, where they basically ignored the timeline altogether because they didn't really want to get pushed into
Resident
a box.
Evil. The newest Resident Evil.
I'm talking Castlevania, though. There was the Castlevania game. I'm drawing a blank on the title of it now, of course. But basically, they kind of skipped the whole timeline because they didn't want to get boxed in, right?
Yeah.
Because Dracula has some rules. He only shows up every 100
years.
Right. You can only do so much with that timeline, and they were running out of dates to use.
that's what I'm saying. I mean, what do you do?
There's so many games here. So I pulled up the wiki so I wouldn't be forget the whole line here of games, right? It starts all the way back in 1986 with the original Castlevania. Which was out on a variety of consoles, the Famicom Disk System, the NES, Commodore 64, etc. The very next year was Castlevania II. The very next year was Haunted Castle. The very next year was Castlevania the Adventure. The very next, basically from 86 to 91, there was a new game every year.
Well, and then
there was only 1 year off, and then they had two in 93.
So how big is this story? How far can we go
before
it's saturated?
It's a lot of games. It's partly why I haven't gotten into them, because it's a little daunting to think how to tackle a franchise that large in 2017 after all these games. And I mean, the most recent one being in 2014.
Well, they have a new one coming out, too.
And they do. They have another. Yeah.
In 2018, we're going to get the Castlevania First Order or something.
I might just
like
get that one and start there.
And that's more Nazi-esque, in my opinion, which looks pretty cool.
Yeah, they're following the Wolfenstein model a little bit, which I'm fine with. Which is cool.
I'm good with that.
But yeah, so they've got the Netflix series, a couple things about it that, people may or may not, care too much about. It's only 4 episodes in the first season.
That pissed me off. Sorry.
Super short.
I had to say that you guys knew it was going to be a hit But yet you put out 4 episodes.
It is really, really short. It's less than 100 minutes. So it's like an hour and a half.
Yeah, they're 23 minutes each episode.
It's basically one movie, which, I mean, they're calling it a season. It kind of reminds me a bit of like Red versus Blue, where, you know, they do a bunch of episodes and they patch it up as a season. It's basically a movie.
And I think the only reason they call it a season is because of the way Netflix...
Well, but Netflix does movies.
They don't do miniseries. It's all seasons.
But they do movies. And so I feel like this easily could have been just a movie.
Yeah, if you spliced it together.
I'm not entirely sure. Because since they released it at once, and it was only 4 episodes, and they're only 23 minutes apiece, it seems like an interesting decision. I'd like to know why.
Right. I was going to say, that's the confusion.
Yeah.
Why? So, one thing I want to put out there. Okay. I'm very excited about this.
All right, let's do it. Dive in.
Dude, I have to say, the voice casting is phenomenal for it. You've got Armitage, who did Thorin, King Thorin in the Hobbit series. I know the Hobbit series wasn't as great, but him himself as an actor is solid. He's the main character.
I will say this.
He's
there were times in the first episode, maybe 2, where I had a hard time understanding some of the characters. The background noise maybe was too much. So like for example, at this point forward, there's going to be some spoilers for season 1 of the Castlevania Netflix series. So if you haven't watched it yet and you don't want spoilers, pause, come back later, and you can talk to us. Like I said, it's only an hour and a half. So, or in the beginning, when Dracula's wife gets burned
by
the stake, and Dracula shows up as like the fire demon
face. He's lost faith in humanity.
I had a hard time understanding every word he was saying. Some of them got droned out by the sound of the flames. And so I feel like the sound mixing maybe was a little bit off in the first episode or two. Like in the bar scene, the drunk dude who's talking, like, I could only understand like every 2 or 3 words he would say. I'd miss.
So those are side characters. Well, Dracula was in it for
an episode and
the
a half.
One episode. And he was in fire for maybe 10.
But important stuff was happening in those scenes, though.
Two scenes.
But the fire scene I'm talking about sets up the rest of the season, and I'm assuming what's happening in season 2. Which is, you know, his army. He raises his army. He does that, right? So he's explaining all of it, and I'm missing some of it. And then the bar scene is where we find out that Belmont, like, who he is. That he's, you know, not just some drunk dude in the bar. Right?
He's actually a badass. Yeah.
Right. So, those are important scenes. So that's why I bring him up, because...
Which guy? Are you talking actual... Belmont's voice was slurred. Armitage's voice. No, you're talking about the drunk fat guy
guy at the bar.
Start the fight.
Right. That guy. Yeah. I was having a hard time catching every word that he said because he had a bit of, his accent was a little thick and he was a little drunk. He was supposed to sound a little drunk and things like that. So I missed a few things there. But
Richard Armitage is one of the actors. There's another McTavish, that guy has done all the voices for like some of the Call of Duty games. So he's another big one. I mean, those are big names. There's also 2 other big names that can't ring a bell, but you've seen them a lot. So in my opinion, the fact that you got these voice actors together to do a mini series and potentially another season, which it's already been renewed. It's already been renewed.
It's greenlit. And just to clarify for people, season 2 will have 8 episodes.
Right.
So it's almost...
Which is still short.
It's still short.
For an anime, very short.
It's still short, but it is double the first season. So that's a good sign.
Right.
It's a good sign. So I'm going to take that as a positive.
Well, I'm just saying, to put this out there and get that type of voice acting, usually it's very no-name-ish, unless you're like Attack on Titan, which you can afford Matt Mercer and like people right off the bat. But I was very surprised to see those types of names for a 4-episode series. So I wonder if it was nostalgic, these guys have a connection to the game, and they wanted to do it, or they just blew the budget on that.
I don't even know that it was a budget issue as much as nobody really knew what to expect from this. It's an adult anime that was all done in English.
That's common.
Right, but and it's about a video game franchise. And a lot of the time, video game adaptations that are movies or shows end up bombing.
Because they scrapped the wrong stuff.
Well,
and in this particular situation, their focus was on the Catholic Church and how corrupt it was. And I think that was a bold choice.
And it was good.
Yeah.
I think that their big bump is from Warren Ellis. So Warren Ellis wrote it, which is a really big deal. I mean, this guy, like, his pedigree is pretty good.
Another name, though. That's what I'm saying. Where do you get the money for these guys?
Well, I mean, you know,
it is Netflix.
It is Netflix. But I mean, he's done a lot. I mean, he wrote on Iron Man 3, Red 2. He's done work on several Marvel TV shows. He wrote the original Red graphic novel. He wrote for Dead Space, which of course is a classic video game everybody loves. He's written for he wrote an episode of Justice League Unlimited, which is one of my favorite cartoons of all time.
One of the best.
And so I mean, he's done a lot of really good stuff. A lot of it animated. And so because a lot of it's animated and he's written graphic novels and he understands that, I think that it was a natural progression for him to take a video game franchise and make it a cartoon. I think that he is really probably the glue that held all of this together.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with that. I my personal opinion is overall it was very good. I liked it a lot. It's touching, like I said, on some very sensitive subjects, and the corruption of the Catholic Church is a huge subject.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Let's just kind of dive into some of the details here. What did you think of the animation style itself?
So the style itself, to me, it's like it's pretty basic to me to most anime.
Yeah.
I think they made it. One thing I do like is they definitely made the characters look white.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes anime, you can't really tell the orientation of the character because they live in Japan, they have Japanese cultures, but they're white or all these other weird things. And I'm not trying to bring race into it, but I'm just saying like that's the difficulty when it comes to anime.
I've talked to some people about like Pokemon, for example. Ash
very much. Yeah.
Is Ash Japanese? Is he? You know,
what is he? Yeah.
And so I understand what you're saying. So I thought the animation was a little plain. Felt that like I was kind of hoping for a twist, something unique to the show, and it just felt very standard anime.
But it was very standard, yes. But the parts, I think they like excelled. I don't know if they did this on purpose. The parts where there was blood were better.
Yes, the violent scenes were the more interesting visually scenes,
which was crazy,
which was cool. So, okay, so were you surprised at all by kind of the level of violence?
Actually, I expected more.
You expected more?
Yeah.
Okay, see, I actually didn't even expect that much because it's just it's a Netflix cartoon. So I figured they'd be careful.
It's a rated mature game. So
well, sure.
I actually expected more decapitations. Mm-hmm. I expected that last battle that he had with the Sleeping Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I expected him to get tore up the Sleeping Knight and then gain his respect. That battle was actually kind of let me down.
Oh, I liked it. I
really,
enjoyed that.
I thought it was very
I like that
anticlimactic.
Battle.
It's like, here we go. Let's test each other's wits. And then it's like, oh, okay. Well, you are who you say you are. I think we're good.
Well, because I think that that's Dracula's son. I think he was just toying with him the whole time.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
Dude has what? He has like... What are those called?
But he's got the whip. Yeah. I actually was expecting to tone it down a bit because since it is Netflix, anybody who has Netflix can watch it basically, right? And so I figured because it's a cartoon, they might have scaled the violence down a bit.
Netflix has been building a lot of anime recently.
Yes.
So.
And so I'm glad they didn't. But I was initially surprised. Like, so that alley scene. For example, where he's gonna save the speaker, right?
Yeah, that's the first time we meet him. Yeah.
Yeah, he takes the guy's finger off and then takes the dude's eyeball out.
I didn't expect that part.
Totally caught me off guard.
So like that's funny. That was like the first real violence because like they beat the crap out of each other in the bar. There was nothing crazy.
No, I will say that some of the burning at the stake was a little graphic for a cartoon. It didn't bother me, but I just thought it was like, I was like, wow, they're really showing this. And then like they go back and she's totally charred. I'm like, wow, they're showing that too. And then she crumbles. I'm like, okay, so they're going all in.
You know
on
that
it.
She's dead. But yeah, that was like the first like, oh, okay, this is where we're at kind of thing. And how about that speaker being a woman and a wizard?
She's a magician. It was so cool.
I know, a magician.
I love that she has powers.
Right? And it's just like, that caught me off guard, to be honest with you. And
it bothered me.
That's the part that's not very lore.
Yeah. It bothered me that she was down in the catacombs with the Cyclops because it seemed like the speakers are fairly intelligent. And it seemed like she would know better than to be down there by herself with no weapons. But it's because she's actually a magician and can easily take care of herself, but she got overpowered by a giant Cyclops. So like that totally worked for me. I liked it
later on. Yeah. But at first you're like, what the hell?
Like, what the hell is she doing down there? And then they're like, well, there's a couple other knights that have been killed. Like, maybe they're with her, but that doesn't make any sense either, right? And so speaking of which, I did like when that scene where he kills the Cyclops and she's brought back to life. I do like at the end, right, as they're leaving, the other dead bodies become unstone.
Yeah, they come back.
They come back too. Because in my head, I'm like, they're going to forget about those bodies. And they didn't.
And they didn't.
They
yeah.
didn't forget about it. I love the attention to detail.
So, like, what I thought from that was the most recent was revived. So those guys must have been there much longer. So
yeah,
they were last to revive. Yeah.
And that was fine with me. Or maybe it was because they were dead. It took a little, like, whatever. I liked that they didn't forget about them.
Yeah, that was super cool.
I really appreciated that. I thought that was great.
That was, so the two main characters, Dracula's son, the female, she's the one that's kind of not in lore that everyone's kind of been complaining about. Mm. She's badass. I like her personally. And I mean, what are your opinions? Do you thought it was a good idea to add this character, or do you think they should have been more faithful?
So this is where I'm going to
sound, or maybe add her later.
For those who listen to Screen Heroes, I'm going to sound a little bit hypocritical here, because I did not like that in the Hobbit movies they brought in, you know, Orlando Bloom.
Oh man.
And expanded his character, who's not even in the Hobbit book, and then they added Tyrael, who's not a character at all. But being someone who doesn't really know the Castlevania lore and doesn't really know the games that well, and doesn't have like a personal investment in the fandom, I thought she was awesome and was really excited to see her use her abilities. You know, she's got the giant ice walls and she can create
fits
fire.
That team. You're like, oh, you've got a complete team.
It
now.
Was really cool. It's like this nice trifecta.
Exactly.
It was a good balance. And I think that it's a good opportunity to add a strong female character into a franchise that wasn't really using one. I mean, I know that Sonya was a character in some of the Castlevania games, or she was going to be. I'm drawing a blank now after reading up on stuff.
They added her and removed her.
Is that what it was?
Yeah,
okay,
it's
maybe
been
that's
so
what it
many.
Was. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like that they wanted to at the beginning of this, you know, in episode 3, we're cementing a strong female character
right.
is going to be part of this team. And I also like that it kind of bookends the first season, because the season starts with a strong female character who is very intelligent and not afraid of Dracula, and not afraid of science and learning and things like that.
I thought that was a very good motivation to explain why Dracula has basically gone mad and is
I would have liked hell. I would have liked a little more time spent on their relationship.
Yeah, it was too quick to cover in like the first half of the first episode.
Well, that was the thing, because like, okay, so they meet, he's kind of rude to her, she's, I feel like she's a little too trusting, you know, and then all of a sudden they've been happily married for what was it, 10 years, 5 years,
yeah.
Something like that. And like, I get it, but because you use so little time, you use less than 100 minutes, you could have given us another 10 and shown them, you know, working on stuff together, inventing
yeah, yeah.
things, traveling maybe, or them getting married. You know, you could have shown something, you know, of them living together as
right.
a couple, not as Dracula and the new girl, right? Because I would have liked to – that. Then I feel like her death would have been – a little more emotional for us, the viewer.
See, that's exactly, yeah. Like, I felt like, oh, that's what changes him. I get why that motivation, but you're right. You didn't have any connection to her. You mm-hmm. were kind of just like, well, he lost his wife. That sucks. I'd be pissed too.
Right.
But then you're asking like, what's the gravity of the situation?
Well, and so if they're married and they're together, why is she at this town performing these scientific acts that are going to
that was
her,
that, I, you know? I'm pretty sure that's where she was from.
It is. Yeah.
But
they said that. But why was she there?
She went initially to Dracula, I believe, for help.
Yes.
For that reason. And then she thought, she saw that this help could help. I'm saying help a lot. She saw that this technology could help her village. And
right.
The Catholic Church, of course, wouldn't have it.
No, of course not.
Because it's the devil's work. But
I don't know. I guess I just – I would have liked more
yeah,
explanation.
Yeah, for sure. I think you could have just
story.
Spent the first two on them.
Well, because I
the
agree.
First two
I totally agree. Because you took a character. She was super interesting and super compelling. And then she's dead like immediately.
Yeah. And like within 10 minutes.
So that was really disappointing. But maybe if they had given her more – then the motivation would be better for Dracula. And then at the same time, Dracula then disappears. He creates his army, and they do more of the talking.
And then flash
in
to
the
present.
The
yeah. And
so,
then flash to the present, and you're like...
And you're following this drunk guy around. They keep talking about how he and his family were a bunch of badasses, but he's not anymore. But he still kind of is.
But he is, yeah.
But he keeps talking about how he's out of practice.
He's in retirement.
So again, it was like they wanted to sell us on a lot of these things without showing us anything.
Right.
Like they were running out of time, and
because they were,
because they didn't have any time.
4 23-minute episodes is not enough.
No,
that's why I was very weirded out when I saw that. I'm like, that has got to be the shortest first season of an anime ever.
Seriously, like you're talking about an entire season that you could put with all of the special features on one DVD.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like
oh, I could send that to you in a zip file right now.
Like, it's nothing. You know, I mean. I thought that One Punch Man was short, and it was like 13 episodes.
13, yeah.
You know, this was so short. I mean, I watched it tonight and last night.
That's the weird
one. In two groups.
I watched it in one sitting Saturday morning.
I was going to, but like we record Screen Heroes last
yeah,
night, and
yeah.
So I did the podcast, watched some, had to go to bed for work, and then I watched the rest of it before we did this. So, you know, it was just so quick. It was so quick.
Oh, like I said, 46 minutes, and you're like, oh, man, The Flash runs longer than that.
And
one episode of The Flash.
It ends on this really big kind of cliffhanger moment of, we've got the team, we're ready to go, let's do this scene.
Exactly.
And it ends. So I will say I'm very glad that it was greenlit for a second season.
Yes.
I hope that they can get it out in a timely manner.
So what I'm hoping for is... we're going to talk about things that are more true to the story, and I'll keep it short. More true to the Castlevania series as a game. Adding a Cyclops in, like, the second episode or third episode was genius, because that's what you fight in Castlevania. You fight these weird-ass creatures that you're like, oh, because Castlevania is the first time they had mixed medieval fantasy and took Dracula and all this other, like, concepts.
It's an interesting
and kind of,
mashup.
They did a very weird mashup,
yeah.
And I thought that was really cool to have that Cyclops scene all together, but then still have vampires coexist. And
well,
it's...
I like the creatures, the demons,
yeah.
Specifically the one that had like all the blue eyes and
the
spikes
could talk.
And stuff. Yeah, that was so cool. I really liked that a lot. I liked that it could talk. I liked the idea that we can have a conversation with these demons. And that scene where the bishop is killed. Inside the church has some of the best dialogue that I can remember on any cartoon. You know, the bishop's talking about you can't be in here. This is a house of God, and the demon's like, God's not here, dude. This is an empty house.
What are you going to do?
In fact, God thinks you're a jackass.
That's pretty much what he said.
You know, it's like that scene was so awesome. That's my favorite scene in the season.
Okay, so that's not my favorite scene, but it is a very good scene.
Do you have a favorite?
A favorite scene particularly? I'm a sucker for action.
Sure.
But I like the assault on the village, and the demons are all coming in. He's rallying everybody.
Yeah.
And he's taking control, and he's like, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. I've done this before. Trust me.
It was cool.
That was a really good scene.
There's a lot of detail in there. They had the holy water. They had salt.
And he's like, I guess he was really holy. Or like,
I love that. His little throwaway lines. Like the one good priest in the whole village.
That was, to me, a really good scene.
That was a very good scene.
Because
it legitimized everything we've been told about this guy.
Right, right.
You know, that he's done this before. Because up until then, he's just beat up some priests and bishops and stuff, right? Or cardinals.
Well, some thugs that are posing as priests.
Yeah, basically, right. He's beat up a drunk fat guy, right? But But now, yeah. like, he's basically leading a small militia of untrained civilians against demons.
See, that's the part for me was just, like, the turning point. It's like, this guy is, not only is he legitimate, but he actually wants to do good at that point.
He does.
Like, saving the speaker's niece or granddaughter yeah. was basically just him being like, okay, are you guys going to leave now?
Right.
I did he needed this, them to leave. Get out yeah. of here.
He was doing that for just to yeah. get things over with.
Exactly. And then finally when they're like, yeah, we kind of need to defend ourselves. And he's like, all right, let's do this. And that's where yeah. he really changes.
Yeah. No, you're totally right.
It's a turning point. But I would like to see in season two, we'll kind of wrap it up here with what yeah. we want to see in the second season.
Sure. Let's do it.
I want to see more creatures.
Yes.
I want to see more background on the Beaumont family.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see like more flashbacks, basically, is what I'm asking for.
Flashbacks would be cool to see the Belmonts fighting vampires mm-hmm. and demons and things like that.
Like, what's the relationship between Dracula and his son? Why do they hate each other?
Right. That would be cool yeah. to see as well. I think that I'd like to see a little bit of them having to kind of do the hero's journey where they have to find Dracula and fight through, you know, hordes of
Well, they
of
all know where he lives.
Stuff. Well, but the castle can move.
That's right.
You know, so I would kind of like if it's not super easy for them to find him.
Well, if you're expanding the episodes to 8, and I imagine they want to go further than season 2.
I think it would be cool if the first 5 episodes are spent with them trying to locate Dracula, and then episodes, you know, 6, 7, and 8 are confronting Dracula.
Yeah, and he gets away somehow.
You know, like, because, you know, maybe the episode 5 ends with them, they found the castle, and then episode 6 is them going through the castle. Episode 7 is them, you know, they find Dracula, and they're fighting Dracula.
Right.
And then, at like, the climax is the end of episode 7, and episode 8 is, you know, how the fight ends.
Well,
and,
the aftermath.
Yeah, I think it would be a really cool arc.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd like to see.
I hope they don't. I'm just saying, I hope they don't end it on season 2. I want to see more fantasy. So, like, basically, we fight. There's creatures. You don't fight just demons in the game. In the game, you fight not just Cyclops either. You fight, like, dinosaurs, you fight like, I mean, I'm serious, like,
well, maybe
goblins,
maybe there's a way
of,
for Dracula to throw him back in time or something like that,
who
you
knows
know?
Yeah,
it would be cool to see more vampires, and maybe
that's what I want. Yeah,
have to see, you know, Dracula's son kill other vampires because they're in his way.
It's obvious vampires yeah. are superior in this world. Mm-hmm. so
that'd be cool to see.
Yeah.
But that's going to be it for us. I know we kind of went long this week. We had a lot to talk about, but we want to know what you guys thought of Castlevania as well. So hit us up, heroespodcast.com and at heroespodcast on all the social medias. Don't forget to go to iTunes and leave us a review. If you do, we will give you a shout out on the show. We will read your review, good or bad. And
what's the best part?
The best part is when we reach 10 reviews, we are going to randomly select one of you and give away a free video game.
Ooh.
And we're talking like a legit video game here, not some 99 cent app or something like that. But we don't want to pick something because we want to talk to the winner and see what platform you have, what kind of games you like, and find something that you actually would be excited to play.
Right.
So give us that review, go check us out, and I guess we'll catch you guys next week.
See you guys.